The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
And new undisputed UFC middleweight champion of the world.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Welcome to the show. Sorry we are a morning late, but if you hear my voice, you can hear that it's a little bit raspy. Not a little bit, maybe a lot. But if you could have heard me yesterday, you'll understand why we didn't do the show. Because if you heard me yesterday, you would not be able to understand the word I said. I did do a BT Sports show, but fortunately, I only speak a third of the time as opposed to half of the time. Yeah. That was pretty bad as well. So I apologize to BT Sport, but more so, I apologize to the believers. But here we are, Tuesday morning. We've got a lot to talk about. Lewis, how are you doing?
Very good. Better late than never, as they say. And you know what? To be honest with you, we care about the product. That's the difference. Some other people would have just thrown it together. They would have said, fuck it. We'll throw together a bullshit product. Michael Bisping cares that much about your auditory experience that he said, you know what? Let's give it a day and give him the absolute best show possible. So I applaud you, Michael Bisping. Can we get a trophy? From Michael Bisping, another trophy?
Most caring podcaster in the world. Listen, I felt like crap yesterday as well. I still feel like crap today. My voice, I've taken ibuprofen. You know, I don't feel good. Rebecca had the theory, and I'm not going to get into this, that maybe it's because for the first time ever, I was around so many people, thousands of people, taking autographs, signing people, you know, hugging people, saying hi, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, no, babe, because I do that all the time. She's like, maybe your immune system is lowered because of all the quarantining. I'm like, okay, that's convenient. I'm going to go with that. It wasn't the martinis. It wasn't the beers. It wasn't the shots of Jameson. It was the fact that my immune system has been compromised due to the government's restrictions. So therefore, blame the government. Don't blame me or my drinking habits.
Well, it's Trump's fault.
Exactly. I said it
somehow it's Trump's fault. Who was in attendance? I don't think they showed him on camera at all, did they? I saw him like in the background. I saw his big red tie. He was definitely sitting there, but I don't think they actually put the cameras on him, did they?
Not to my knowledge, because as I was walking out the arena, Dana was downstairs. He was leaving, so we said hi quickly. And he's like, did you see it when Trump came in the building? I said, I didn't actually. And he said, oh, the place went crazy. It was amazing. And I was like, I didn't see it. And I'm assuming because he never showed it on camera. But on what I was talking about a second ago, I didn't drink a lot. I didn't drink a lot, but just every night you're in Vegas. I sat at the hotel bar at the Vidar. It's a very quiet hotel. There's no casino, nothing like that. But after you've worked all day, you're like, oh, okay, I deserve a little tipple. So two or three martinis, maybe a glass of wine. That was it. But it was every night. And then it was talking, yapping all day, all night. And then this is the result, ladies and gentlemen. So
most people, deal with it. Devil's advocate, most people that have three martinis are going to be pretty fucked up.
Yeah, well, I wasn't because I did them every night. Martinis. Final night after the fights on the Saturday night, we went out with some of the ESPN guys. And again, I was back in my room by 1:45, something like that. So it wasn't crazy, but we had a few drinks, Beto Komoto, the whole ESPN crew. Great guys, good time. Yeah. Nice little, you know, we deserve some reward after a hard day's work. But my voice, I'm too old, man. I can't take it.
We had the UFC Fight Pass crew here, and it was really fun. Harrington and Diego were here, and Paco, who films the Fight Journal with us, and it was just silliness. They, I don't know, we got really drunk. They were encouraging us to get drunk. But it was really fun. I mean, it was actually a really fun experience. That'll be coming out in a few months. But shout out to Jane and the crew that came out and dealt with our shenanigans and dumb jokes and really off color jokes.
It's like when they want you to get drunk because they want you to have a good time. Because if you're having a good time and you're being funny and being silly or whatever, then it's more fun to watch. It's like when you're on The Ultimate Fighter. You know, you're there to train, but they stock that house with a lot of booze, every spirit under the sun, a fridge full of beer. And anytime, excuse me, you're on the Ultimate Fight, if you want anything, there's a phone. You pick it up, and no matter what it is, you know, within reason, they'll bring it to you. And certainly alcohol, of course, don't worry about that. They're like, in fact, the stock room is already full. So just take
make
a
it
look.
A double. Have fun.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about that. Unless you've been under a rock, UFC 264 took place at the weekend. Incredible event. It was nice to be in Las Vegas and see a packed arena like that. First time for me in a while. I know the pay-per-views have been sold out all year, but I mean, man, the atmosphere was incredible. And you got to lend a lot of that to Conor McGregor, to be fair. You know, he brings that kind of excitement. But the UFC production, they always go above and beyond. And this time what they had in every single seat, 22,000 seats. This isn't an easy thing to do. 22,000 seats. They had these bracelets for everyone to put on. So, and whoever walks out, the bracelets are all synchronized and they flash up into the color of the fighter, like their country or whatever, if they have a slogan or whatever. So for McGregor, it was, what is the Irish flag? Green, white and orange or whatever. Yeah. If it was Brazil, it was orange, sorry, yellow and green and so on and so forth. And every time in a dark arena with 22,000 bracelets all lighting up and flashing the same.
And they were choreographing with the music, like the beats of the break. It was at one point we noticed it at home. We were like, what's going on here? We're like, what's going on? We had never noticed it. And then the production crew said, they were like, oh, they have bracelets. And it blew my mind. It was really cool. Very, very unique. I've never seen anything like that. I don't know if that's a unique idea for the UFC or if they lifted that from some other production, but bravo to the UFC because that was a genuine moment that it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was cool.
They possibly stole it from someone else, but it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Big concerts, you see something good, you go for it. But it was cool and the excitement was there and the storylines were there. And, you know, McGregor, you know, hyped it up at the press conference. Pretty nasty. He's pretty nasty, but it kind of got me fired up for it. I thought, ooh, he's going to come out hard and fast and all the rest of it. So he did what he needed to do. Right. That's that. Let's get into the fight. I mean, come on. I mean, anything to say, Lewis, before we get into the fight? I'll let you talk and give me a second to sip on my honey and lemon and Manuka honey and tea that I have in here, which is almost run out. Let's my voice rebuild. And then you talk for a second.
Yeah, I mean, look, this main event, you don't want a main event to end the way that it ends, right? Where it's a weird freak injury. Obviously, Dustin, I think he's getting a little bit of criticism after the fact for sort of the way that he handled it. But I mean, Connor's the one who made it nasty. And Dustin was winning that fight. I almost feel bad for Dustin because Dustin was winning that fight handily, you know? And what?
Dustin was destroying him.
Yeah.
It wasn't winning the fight handily.
I thought you were arguing with me. I was like, what are you talking about?
It wasn't winning the fight handily. It was a goddamn massacre.
Yeah.
McGregor started pretty decent. He went out there because he had to show everyone that he'd done something different, and he came out in a different stance and he threw a couple of kicks and that was great. And then he started getting his ass kicked, which is the reality of the situation. Dustin took his time. He was taking reads. He was not going to rush into it because he probably knows McGregor's going to come hard based on everything that he said and just the way McGregor fights. So he was kind of taking his time. He ate a few leg kicks. And then he went to work and he started landing with some good shots, some heavy shots, landed a beautiful left hand, landed a great uppercut. And then it was Connor that clinched. It was Connor that initiated the clinch because he didn't like what was happening. And that's fair enough. You know, that's not an insult. It's just the way the sport goes.
Did say preemptively the first person to initiate grappling is a pussy or whatever.
Yeah. But, you know, all's fair in love and war. Listen, when you get your bell rung and you're getting cracked, the smart thing to do is to grab a hold of them.
Right.
Either grab a hold or circle the octagon and get away. So anyway, he grabbed a hold. Dustin tried to take him down. Connor went for the guillotine. The reason you go for a guillotine in that situation is very simple, is because you feel you're about to get taken down. So you might as well take something. You might as well try and go for something. So it's like a Hail Mary. So, okay, I'm going to go down. Well, fuck you. I'm going to wrap up your neck first before I do. And you never know. He might have got it. Dustin had a nice little remark afterwards. He said, I've trained with high-level guys, which I'm sure he has it. American top team. And I know a high level jiu-jitsu guy. I can tell by their grip, their strength, their positioning. He said, I didn't feel any of that. So I knew I was good. And then from there, when Dustin got on top, you know, it was a barrage. It was nasty. I mean, those elbows, everything about it was, you know, It was nasty, and it was a 10-8 round. It was a 10-8 round on two judges' scorecards. I scored it a 10-8. Most people I spoke to scored it a 10-8. You know, there were some upkicks from McGregor, but that was about it. And I was a little surprised. I didn't really see McGregor trying to get back to his feet. He wasn't trying to lock up any submissions, any sweeps, anything, really. You know, there was a period there where he had both shoulders flat on the mat while Dustin was just teeing off with elbows. And if you do jiu-jitsu, that's the last place you want to be. You know, you're supposed to try and be on your side or on one shoulder. If you're flat on your back, that's exactly where your opposition wants you. In fact, if you're trying to get up and you come on one side, the first thing you do is push them back down onto both shoulders so that they cannot get up. You know, and Conor was lying there happily. And then, as we know, the fight ended. The reason it ended, I looked away for a split second. Right, I was like, you know, because it was exciting, it was crazy. I turned around, someone like, holy shit, I think he might stop him in a second because the referee was looking. And then when I looked away and then I looked back, they were on the feet. But what happened was Conor was hooking his finger over the end of the gloves. So it was like restricting Dustin's movement. So he pulled away to talk to the ref and then Conor jumped up. And then they both threw a left hand at the same time and Conor went down. And from my vantage point, it looked like the left hand landed and he went down and he was maybe knocked out. But as we know, it was a leg break. Now, I've been watching many Instagram pages. Every doctor under the sun has come out and given a breakdown and people are hypothesizing what caused the break and all the rest of it. He checked a leg kick or he hit an elbow, whichever way it was. One doctor I saw said that the way he stepped back and he put a lot of weight on his left leg. Yeah, southpaw. I'm orthodox. Yeah, as he stepped back on there, it kind of rotated and twisted and that caused the tibia to break. You know, unfortunate situation, but I didn't really see anything out of Conor that would have changed the narrative in the second round. Of course, it's a convenient excuse. And listen, I'm not trying to hate on Conor. That's not what I'm doing here. What I'm doing is reporting the facts, right? He was getting dominated badly in that first round. It was a 10-8 round for Dustin. And that's traditionally Conor's best round. I didn't see anything that would have changed the tide in round two or round three. Now, it's not impossible. Of course, it's not impossible, but was it likely? Probably not. So in some ways, even though that was excruciatingly painful for Conor and it's going to be timeout and all the rest of it, it actually, in a funny way, was convenient because it keeps the dream alive. It gives them an excuse. It allows them to say, no, I broke my leg. I'll recover. I'll come back. We'll do another fight, a fourth fight, and then we'll win and we'll go on from there.
Well, that's crazy, though. Do you think that there should be a fourth fight? Absolutely not. Now, I know they're talking about that immediately. You know, I think Dana White said that. But the reality is, like, I mean, it was so one-sided in this fight. And it was so one-sided the last time. I mean, we are years removed from Conor McGregor beating Dustin Poirier. And this is a different Dustin Poirier, different weight class, different everything. So I don't really want to see a fourth fight between these two. I understand keeping the narrative alive and keeping that, you know, you can keep the storyline going without a doubt. Obviously, it's there. I just don't feel like it's I want to see Dustin Poirier go and become champion of the 155-pound division and fight all the best people at 155. And we'll see if Conor will ever come back. I don't know that Conor McGregor is ever returning to his former self. I mean, he was already sort of it almost reminds me of Anderson Silva, right? Because Anderson Silva was sort of, you know, coming down to the end of his career, he was sort of losing some fights at the end, and then he got this nasty injury. And I don't know that we ever saw Anderson Silva return to form after that, right? I don't know that Conor McGregor can ever chase that 155-pound title again, and I definitely don't want to see him fight Dustin again.
Hey, I don't get everything perfect here, so I'm not being a stickler, but I just know people in the comment section are going to talk shit. If I don't say anything, it was the leg break that happened first, and then the consequence, the losses came after the leg break, if you remember, against Weidman. But whatever, it doesn't matter.
Okay, you're right about that. You're right.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Not a big deal, but you know what these dickheads are like in the comment section. Yeah, I see you. So anyway, listen, Dana White said it at the post-fight press conference. You know, he said, yeah, we're probably going to do a fourth fight. You know, it was unfortunate. It was bad. Listen, if you're the UFC, if it's my company, yeah, of course you do that. The appetite will still be there. I think for Dustin Poirier right now, what's going to happen is he's going to fight Charles Oliveira. An early prediction would be that probably Dustin would beat Charles Oliveira. I'm just throwing that out there. I'm not saying that's an official prediction, but it's a very, very likely scenario. No disrespect to the champ, of course, but you know, I think right now, the way Dustin looks, I'd probably pick Dustin. And then Conor's going to recover, he's going to rehab, and then he's going to come back and fight for the belt against Dustin Poirier, right? Which is crazy, but you can see the argument for it. Now, while that's a good opportunity for Conor McGregor, I think that's the worst possible thing for him. It really is to go in there against Dustin a third time in a row where he's been stopped twice. It was a stoppage. It was a TKO stoppage. The last one, it was a TKO stoppage back in January. You know, so what he's going to take. And people said.
Well, he was freaking out. Remember when they stopped it? He was like, call it a doctor stoppage. A doctor stoppage.
It was a TKO. It happened in the fight. Technically, it was a knockout. The problem a lot of people say, and I don't know if this is true, but it sounds reasonable. And I can see, and the history has shown us this, inactivity isn't good for a fighter. And certainly when you're living a lavish lifestyle and enjoying yourself in between fights, inactivity is terrible for you. You know, you're supposed to be hungry. You're supposed to be in the gym on a Monday morning, doing everything you can, living a good life, living a clean life and a good diet and all the rest of it. I know I wasn't perfect, so I'm not one to talk, but I know from experience, it's not conducive to being an elite level athlete. So now on top of all that timeout that he's had, and I think it's fair to say, you know, that wasn't the Conor McGregor from 2014. Far from it, you know. Taking a year out now, 9 months, 12 months, whatever, it's not going to be good for him. What's he going to do in that time? I don't know. Is he going to self-implode? Is he going to self, you know, is he going to, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. Is he going to just enjoy himself? By rights, he should. He's got lots of money. Go and enjoy yourself. Fuck it. You've earned all the cash in the world. Go and enjoy it. I don't think coming back after 12 months, living that kind of lifestyle is going to do him any favors walking into a world title fight against Dustin Poirier, because we're just going to see more of the same.
Yeah, I mean, he's not. There's no way he's going to be better. No way he's coming in better after breaking his ankle, taking time off. It's goddamn near impossible. You know, Conor, he will always have an opportunity to be a prize fighter and do whatever he wants to do. You know, it's going to be interesting to see. I will actually be impressed with Conor McGregor if he decides to come back after this. Because I think in the moment he's freaking out, adrenaline's kicking in, he's sitting there, he's embarrassed, he's talking all this shit on the floor, right? But will he even want to come back? You rehab it, you go out, you're like, fuck, dude, I can retire right now, get fat, never have to worry about anything again, get even richer, because I'm not worried about anything except for investing my money and building more businesses and making more whiskey companies. I would be impressed with him if he decides to rehab his leg and come back and go and fight, because once again, we said it on the last show, he hasn't won a fight in a half a decade.
Yeah, listen, that is definitely a possible scenario as well. Because right now, Saturday night, listen, there was a lot of distasteful comments from Conor afterwards. As you said, adrenaline spiking, he snapped his leg, he's pissed off, it happened, all the rest of it. Yeah, they weren't very good comments, but, you know, don't read too much into that. Everyone says things when they're angry. Certainly adrenaline is flowing through you. I've said dumb shit when I've had a microphone. Okay, granted, I've never threatened to kill an opponent and their wife in their sleep. Still, it's a little extreme, but you know, all right, we're not going to sit here and break that down and talk shit about what a bad guy he is. He was upset, he had his leg snapped, all the rest of it. He was embarrassed. Whatever you want to call it, it was unacceptable, but fuck it, he said those things. If he was to come back, I would be impressed as well. I would be impressed. If I was Conor McGregor right now, I don't know. I think I would retire. Because what's he going to do? If he can't beat, let's say he comes back and fights Dustin and he can't beat Dustin, what's he going to do? Fight Nate Diaz again? I don't know if he wins that fight now either as well. You know, I mean, he's got the money. He's got the money. Just you did it. You came in. You made an impact. Now it's time to do something else, because fighting the top fighters in the world doesn't seem to be working out for you. And I'm not trying to be mean. I'm not being a hater. I'm not jumping on the bandwagon and saying, fuck Conor. If you look at the facts, if you look at the records, if you look at what's happened, he is not winning fights anymore. And he's getting injured and he's getting hurt. You know, it's not a fucking game in there. This is real stuff. Look at him. He's got his leg fucking snapped. He was on, instead of being at an after party, he's in a hospital in Los Angeles having an operation. There's serious consequences. Against Dustin in the last fight, he got knocked unconscious. That does damage to the brain. you know, in those wars with Nate Diaz. I'm not saying he's fucking, you know, he's what's the word I'm looking for? What do you call it? I'm not saying he's punch drunk or anything like right. that. I'm saying, but that happens. The longer you go, the longer you stick around. Why bother? Why bother? He's made the money. We might see that happen. After he calms down and reassesses, we might see that. But if he chooses not to and does choose to come back, then yeah, I would respect that big time.
Yeah. What about people that are being critical of Dustin for like talking shit afterwards and sort of,
How did he talk shit? What did he say?
I guess they were saying that, you know, because Connor's injured and he's sort of gloating or, you know,
I thought Dustin was all class. And that was the thing after the fight and when he was talking to Joe and Connor was sitting there and he was pointing a gun to his head. He said, I'll kill you both in your sleep. I'll kill you both in your sleep. You're going to get it in your sleep. In your sleep, you'll get it. Even then, Dustin didn't turn around and go, what are you talking about, Connor? You're on the floor. You snapped your leg. I beat the shit out of you. You're nothing. You're done. It's over. Take your sorry ass back to Ireland. There was none of that because I guarantee you, I would have fucking said that 100% after all the shit you talked and he talks about my wife and now you're still doing it when you're on the floor after I've kicked your ass. 100% I would have buried that guy, but Dustin didn't. So if anyone's talking shit about Dustin today, that is misplaced big time.
I completely agree. And to be honest with you, I mean, Connor's the one who throws venom and he makes it very personal. And so it's like, you make your bed, you got to sleep in it, obviously. Obviously Dustin going to fight for the title next. I think that's a foregone conclusion. Dude, I don't know, man. I think Charles Oliveira is going to have a really tough time with Dustin Poirier. I think Poirier is a fucking next level Dustin Poirier.
It's weird, isn't it? Because you see fighters and they go on a journey and you've seen Dustin just get better and better and you can see how much it meant to him every step of the way, you know? And I bumped into Dustin a few times and he was humble enough to come to me and say, Michael, you're an inspiration to me. To see you winning the belt so long in your career inspires me and lets me know that I could do it. And you can see from Dustin, what is he, 36, I think, something like that. He's not a spring chicken. He's not old. I forget his exact age right now. But still, you know this guy's working. You know, this guy's getting better all the time. You can see the hunger and you can see the disappointment when he lost to Khabib. And it was after the Khabib fight, I saw him and his wife on a bus. I was commentating somewhere. And when we were getting off, that's when we spoke. I said, hey, don't feel bad. Yada, yada, yada. You say nice things. And he said, no, you're an inspiration to me, Mike. And you can see what he's done. And it's just incredible to see. And he's just getting better and better and better. And yeah, you know, I don't think it would be an easy fight for Charles. In fact, I have Dustin winning that fight. And I think it'll happen before the end of the year. I mean, Charles wants to fight. Dustin wants to fight. Dustin hasn't really got a mark on him. Hasn't really got a scratch. He might have a little bit of a, he might be limping with his leg, but not limping anything like McGregor today. Mm. You know what I mean? So, it's great.
That's it. All right. Well, I thought it was a great main event. Overall, you know, a little bit of a weird way for it to end. Ultimately, you know, it's not as satisfying when it ends with an injury, but I think everyone that's in the know is, you know, has moved on from the Dustin Poirier McGregor scenario. Now it'll probably happen again. I know Dana White and company are saying they want it to happen again, but I think most people are going like, nah, let's just move on.
Well, most rational people would do, but McGregor has this way of just captivating people and they don't act rational. Do you know what I mean? They worship this guy and they love this guy.
They really
and
do. Even,
yeah, they do. It's insane. I mean, fair play to him to build a fan base and cultivate it like that. But listen to this. Let me just give you a Hollywood scenario. And this would be a Hollywood fucking scenario. And this would be a movie. And if McGregor can do this, then God bless him. Could you imagine that he comes to the sport, he takes over the UFC, he becomes this massive star, becomes a two-weight division champion, and then all the rest, as we saw, we've seen the antics, we saw the fall from grace, we saw the, you know, whatever. Then he loses to Dustin twice, loses to Khabib, breaks his fucking leg, he's made hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, he's rich as fuck, and everyone thinks he's going to retire. Could you imagine if he goes away, repairs his leg, changes everything about him, goes to some gym on the mean streets of LA, rebuilds, comes back stronger and just like fucking takes over the sport again and dominates everybody. Oh my God. Oh, I think I'd have to kill myself because I couldn't deal with the fucking ass kissing that would go on. But oh my, hey, listen, could you imagine though?
Yeah, I mean, no, not really. I couldn't imagine. But like, he's going to go. He's going to. You see, like, was it Rocky III, where Rocky went to Apollo's gym in the mean streets of LA?
Yeah.
Learn the rhythm, learn how to move like a brother.
Exactly. You know, was he boxing bubbles, shadow boxing bubbles and stuff and dancing around?
Yeah.
No, hey, could you imagine though? It'd be unbelievable. It really would. Probably is unbelievable.
Yeah.
So it's not going to happen. But he's gonna fight Dustin. He'll probably lose to Dustin, and probably then he'll retire.
And if you're Dustin, like, fuck it. If you're Dustin, you're like, all right, dude, I'll take another $5 million, do whatever it is, whatever the crazy amount of money that he'll make to beat up Conor McGregor for a third time in a row.
I don't know for a fact, but I heard from a pretty reliable source, and I probably shouldn't say this, but I already got $5 million guaranteed plus pay-per-view. And I don't know what the pay-per-view was, but Dana said it was trending at over 2 million buys. So Dustin today is a very rich man. If he did over 2 million buys, he's looking at $10 million, if not more.
Wow.
You know what I mean? 10 million for a little kid from Louisiana. He's done pretty fucking good. And God bless him. He deserves it every step of the way. The man fights well. He fights with heart. He fights with integrity. I mean, that was awesome to see after the fight, saying the kid with cancer in the crowd, you're the real fighter. When I go home after this, I'm done. My fight's over. His fight never ends. I mean, he's just a great person. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, yeah, good for Dustin. He really deserves all the success. Hey, Mike, real quick, let's take a moment and thank Paleo Valley for supporting today's show. I really do love Paleo Valley beef snacks. If you're on a high-protein, low-carb diet, everyone knows beef jerky is probably already a part of your diet. You go to the gas station, you grab whatever you can get. It's quick. It's in a bag. It's convenient. Obviously, that's great. I'll tell you right now, a lot of the stuff you're eating with those things that you buy at the gas station are not healthy. There's a lot of fillers. There's a lot of the stuff that's not really good for your body. It's not all natural. And that's where Paleo Valley comes in, Mike.
Yeah, well, listen, the stuff you're talking about there at the gas station is full of crap, let's be honest. We could list them. We could go through them. But all you need to know is it's not good for you. There's a lot of chemicals. There's mechanically separated chicken. There's hormones. There's GMOs. There's a lot of shit that everybody in this day and age should be trying to avoid. That's where the 100% grass-fed beef sticks from Paleo Valley come in. These things are delicious. They don't have the hormones. They don't have the MSG. And they contain a lot of vitamins A, D, E, and K. So listen, it's good on the go. It's delicious. It tastes good. It's cheap. We've got a great offer for you. We're going to knock some money off. And it's a good, healthy snack. I'm trying to lose weight. I was just in New Orleans. I put a little bit of weight on. I ate a lot of food. I might have drank a little bit. I'm going to be Paleo Valleying all week to the max. Maybe a little salad thrown in here and there. Listen, at the end of the day, why is grass-fed beef so important? Well, 100% grass-fed beef contains more calcium, magnesium, potassium, zinc, phosphorus, beta-carotene, and iron than grain-fed beef. At the end of the day, you're on the go. You haven't got time to cook. You just go to the kitchen drawer like I do. You slide that bad boy open. You pull it out. There it is, 100% grass-fed beef stick. No carbs. No nonsense. You just eat that bad boy and off you pop. Good for you. Good for the kids. If you've got a lazy wife like me, we're raising the kids on Paleo Valley grass-fed beef sticks, okay? They are the leanest, healthiest kids you've ever seen in your life, Lewis.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, your kids are jacked. Everyone thinks that in your neighborhood. Your wife.
They're on steroids.
Your wife doesn't cook. She's just giving three meals a day, beef sticks.
Everyone thinks Lucas is on steroids. I'm like, no, I'm just feeding him Paleo Valley grass-fed beef sticks. That's so incredible. If you want to also abuse your children, but you want to save 15% whilst doing so, go to paleovalley.com. Of course, we're messing around like always, but these things, they're great. They taste delicious. That's the main thing. Taste delicious. They're good for you. No chemicals, no crap. Go to paleovalley.com and use the code BELIEVE15. What's that going to do? It's going to get you 15% off your first order. These are great snacks on the go. They are convenient health snacks. Good for you. Good for kids. And they're full of probiotics, which aid in digestion and gut health. Paleovalley.com, one more time, is the website. BELIEVE15, 15% off your first order. You're welcome. Okay, where were we? All right, so I mean, so many storylines to talk about, McGregor and Poirier. If something else pops back in my head, which it will, we'll come back to it. But right now, there was a co-main event on, and I got my pick extremely wrong. Gilbert Burns went out
where's my $100, motherfucker?
Take it. I'll send it to you. Don't worry. In fact, I'll deduct it from your fucking pay for the one-man show. I'll Venmo it to you. Man. I thought Wonderboy the way he fought Jeff Neal, and just like, I think I got caught up in the romance of the story. He's 38 years old. I thought, wow, wouldn't it be amazing if he became the champion? He's such a class act. He's such a great guy, you know, and he's so fucking good, which he is. But Gilbert Burns was tremendous. It wasn't the most amazing fight. Even Dana White came out and said afterwards that, he didn't like the fight, but it was a win. He got a win over a tough opponent, which is not an easy thing to do. Hey, babe, can I get a tea, honey and lemon, please, darling? Anyway, sorry about that. But I did. Gilbert was great. He did what he needed to do. He got the takedown every round, and he made the takedown count in every single round. He tried to get the double leg up against the fence, and Wonderboy spread his legs. When someone's trying to take you down against the fence, that's what you want to do. You want to spread your legs far and wide as you can without losing balance, because that stops you joining your hands together around the ass. When you spread your legs, obviously, it becomes, look, if I'm here like that, and you spread your legs, it's harder to get around. So what you do is then you transition to the single leg. DC called it perfectly, because then you pull one leg away, your legs are separated, you pull one leg away and you're off balance and you fall over. It was great wrestling by Gilbert Burns. He made it count. He controlled it. I thought Wonderboy did well defending himself, because Gilbert Burns is ridiculous on the ground. So he did a good job of defending. He had a couple of moments when he got back to his feet, but realistically, he didn't really do much. And I think it's kind of like you're standing there, you know Gilbert's going to shoot, or you know he wants to grab, and you're waiting for the perfect moment or whatever, and you end up freezing. And he kind of froze, I thought. And Gilbert looked great. Gilbert did what he needed to do, won the fight, didn't get the finish. Wonderboy didn't really do much. But still, that is high-level mixed martial arts. They're as technical as it gets. Gilbert Burns is as technical as it gets. He's very dangerous with the hands, but when it comes to grappling, he's one of the best, one of the very best. When it comes to stand-up, Wonderboy is one of the very best. It was a high-level chess match, so it wasn't crazy guys swinging shit, going crazy, screaming at one another, covered in blood. It was a high-level chess match. You got to respect what you saw, and and that was that. That was that. You know, well done, Gilbert Burns.
Yeah, Gilbert looked incredible. And I said this leading up to the fight, that I think Kamaru... he just made Gilbert look bad, you know, and I think it's more of a credit to how good Kamaru is. It wasn't a commentary that Gilbert's incredible, you know, and I think most people going against Kamaru look bad. So I think that was another thing that maybe was playing into why a lot of people were counting Gilbert Burns out of this fight. Who was the favorite in the fight? Was it Wonderboy? He might have been a little bit of a favorite. It was very, very close. I remember very, very close odds going into the fight, which was... Yeah, sort of surprising, because...
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm not... Go on, sorry.
No, I was going to say Gil just fought for the title. You know, I just feel like people should have been giving him a little bit more respect leading into the fight.
I gave him a lot of respect. You got to remember that first round against Kamaru. He almost finished Kamaru. I thought he looked fantastic in that fight. Yeah, okay, he made some mistakes and he got finished. You know, he led on the ground too much and took a lot of damage from Kamaru. But it is what it is, you know. That's in the past. Listen, I was giving Gilbert all the credit in the world, but I was just giving more credit to Wonderboy. Right. You know, Wonderboy's such a veteran. I saw him at the hotel afterwards. He walked past. He was with Tim from Paradigm, who was taking care of him. This is what a wholesome guy Wonderboy is. He's just had a fight, a big fight, co-main event on a gigantic fight card that just took place. A Conor McGregor fight card has a special kind of energy. There's always opportunities to be made in Las Vegas with after parties and stuff, you know. Fighters like Wonderboy Thompson, when you reach that level, you can go to an after party and get $20,000 just to go to a fucking nightclub and drink alcohol and look like the man, right? What's Wonderboy doing in that situation?
And by the way, that's all those parties, right? Like when you see like this after party, this fighter at this club, most of the time that fighter's being paid to be there.
100% they're getting paid. Their manager set it up. Now, McGregor had one at the win. Guarantee he was getting 250 grand, 300 grand, maybe even $500,000. The DJs get that. And if it's McGregor's after party, that's a big ticket in Las Vegas. Yeah. Even though I guarantee he never showed up. And I went to the one at the win. I went to the one at the win after the Khabib fight. Said I wasn't going to go, had a couple of drinks, got coaxed into it, went in. Conor didn't show up again because he got beat there. So, yeah, whatever. That's just a little side note. Anyway, after parties. If you're a fighter, you're a high-level guy, fighting on a big show, you can make money going to the clubs. What was Wonderboy doing? He walks in, he's with his dad, he's with his mom, he's with his auntie, you know, he's with his family, right? And they've got pizza and they're going up to the room. And I'm like, he's just fucking, what a guy, you know? So I go up to him, I have a little chat. He's fine. He's all smiles. He's a great guy. I give him a hug and he's like, oh man, it is what it is. It's not the first fight I lost. I said, exactly. Live to fight another day. Took a picture with him, you know? And yeah, he's just all class, man. All good. As is Gilbert Burns.
Well, I mean, also, like, you know, Wonderboy, honestly, you know, is it that much of a misstep for him? You know, he loses a, you know, it was a decisive decision. But at the same time, he lost to Gilbert Burns, who is, you know, who's maybe the next best guy in the division, legitimately, you know? I mean, Gilbert Burns, he might actually beat everybody but Kamaru Usman in that division.
Yeah, Gilbert didn't beat Wonderboy the way that he beat Tyron Woodley. No disrespect to Tyron, but that was like a vicious beatdown. And then before that, he knocked out Damian Maia. Gilbert Burns is high level, man. He's really, really good. He's got knockout power. He's got world-class grappling. And again, just one of the most solid human beings you could ever meet. Everything I said about Wonderboy applies to Gilbert Burns. Mm. The only thing is for Gilbert Burns, what does he do now? Because he is, I think he's the next ranked guy underneath Kamaru, but he just lost to Kamaru. And I think it was really cool of Gilbert. He had the wherewithal to know not to call out Kamaru because he's not going to get that fight. But he called out Leon Edwards. He called out Masvidal. I think they were the two names, right? And I think that they're fantastic matchups and logical choices. I mean, Masvidal or Leon Edwards, it has to be one of them.
It must be. But, you know, if you're Masvidal or Leon Edwards, you don't want that fight. That fight's a goddamn nightmare.
You have to fight somebody. Yeah. Masvidal has to fight someone. He's not fighting for the belt. Kamaru, he's fighting Colby. I don't know when, but that fight's going to happen. Leon Edwards should fight Masvidal. Gilbert Burns should fight Masvidal. Masvidal's like up there. He's one of the top guys. He's got the most hype. He's almost as big as a Nate Diaz. He's got to fight one of them. He can't take an easy fight down the bottom of the pecking order. No chance. Who do you think it's going to be?
Are you saying Masvidal is ducking fights? Are you saying that right now on the Believe You Me podcast?
That is not what I'm saying at all. Do you think I'm crazy? Do you think I've just got back into the good graces of the Cubans? In fact, a Cuban saved my life on Sunday morning because we had a few drinks after the fight and I go back to my hotel. I think it's like 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, okay? But I'd had a couple of shots, I'd had a few drinks, I'd had a few martinis, a little tipsy.
A few of everything.
Yeah, you know, I don't discriminate. I get back to the hotel, it's about 2 o'clock in the morning. My room is, you know, there's suits everywhere, there's fucking clothes everywhere, there's workout stuff, there's sweaty stuff, my bathroom is just, I didn't know I had that much shit, but there's like contact lenses, toothpaste, razors, just fucking shit everywhere. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, oh my God, that's going to be a nightmare to pack in the morning. My flight was at 7 a.m. And that means I've got to be there at 6 a.m. That means I'm probably going to get up at 5. I'm like, oh God. I go to bed, I set like 20 alarms because I know the first one ain't going to do the job because I'm drunk, I'm going to sleep, I'm tired, I've worked my ass off all week, I've done BT Sport, I've done Believe You Me, I've done ESPN, I've done UFC, I've done interviews. I'm just a great guy, Lewis. And I'm like, busy. I'm tired. Go on.
I was saying busy, a busy man.
Oh, busy guy. I thought you said Bisping. So I set, do you ever do that? I set an alarm, I think it was 5, but one at 5:05, one at 5:10, one at 5:15. It's a good job I did.
Oh yeah.
Because I think I fucked off. It was the last alarm that I finally decided to get out of bed. Anyway, I get out of bed, grab everything, throw it in my suitcase as fast as humanly possible, you know. And then I get downstairs, but I've got no transport to the airport. And I'm like, I've got my suitcase. I'm running around. I'm like, fuck. Last thing I want to do is miss my flight. You know what I'm saying? Right. It's just not a good look. It's a loser. You might have to wait all day. Who knows when you're going to get home? And anyway, so I sprint down towards the taxi queue, the line, even though there's no taxis there. But I'm like, I've just got to get there as fast as possible. As I'm sprinting off, some dude's like, Michael Bisping. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry. Cast off for pictures. I've got to get to the airport. And I get down to the taxi line, even though there was no taxis there visible. I'm like, where are the taxis? They're like, there's none here. I'm like, I knew that. I don't know why I ran here. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And then the same guy that basically I big leagued, he comes over, you need a ride? This is my limo here. I'll take you to the airport. I'm like, oh my God, you're a fucking... I said, you can take me to the airport. He said, yeah, come on, let's go. I'm like, wow. So I jump in his fucking beautiful SUV limousine. Ooh. I jump in the front. I'm like, oh my God. I said, you are a fucking lifesaver. I gave him some cash to say thank you. And we just got chatting. He was a Cuban. Nice guy. Bert, thank you so much for the ride to the airport. Anyway, I digress. No, I'm not saying Masvidal's fucking ducking. I'm saying he needs to fight, and it's going to be one of those guys, and I'm very much looking forward to finding out which one. In fact, Harrington, let's show yourself, present yourself to the believers. I'm interested to know, you do have a good level of mixed martial arts, and you have been on the show today. Come on, please. And who do you think? How do you think this is all going to play out? Who do you think Masvidal should fight? Who do you think Gilbert should fight? Give me your thoughts.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest. The Masvidal fight seems almost too easy for Gilbert Burns. You know what I mean? This is a guy who throughout his career has struggled with grapplers. He struggled with wrestling guys who can take him down and hold him there. We just watched, you know, Gilbert Burns go in there against possibly the most dangerous striker in the division, who's able to hold him down and completely neutralize everything that he did. If I'm Jorge Masvidal, the only fight I'm looking at is Leon Edwards. You know, yeah, like, well, that's a guy who's not a takedown threat.
Yeah, he is a takedown threat, though. He's very much a takedown threat. I mean, look what he did to Diaz. He took him down time and time again. He was able to grapple with Gunnar Nelson and still win that fight. He's a solid grappler. Of course, his bread and butter is striking, but, you know, against Masvidal, you want to take him down, you want to control him because he's dangerous on the feet. It's just interesting. So, Stephen Thompson, I'm not sure where he goes next. He'll get a good fight. He'll still have a few more fights. He'll be in the promotion for a bit until he decides to hang it up, whenever that is. He lives a clean life. He might go to 40, 41, 42. You never know with that guy. But you've got a backlog. You've got Masvidal. You've got Leon. You've got Gilbert Burns. Anyone else that are missing in the welterweight division?
The dark horse, Michael Chiesa.
Oh, sorry, pardon me. We've got Michael Chiesa. We've also got, what's his face, Khamzat Chimaev, who just had a fight booking. Who did he get booked up against?
The Leech, Li Jingliang.
Yeah. Okay. So that's further down the pecking order. We're talking superstars, top five. Chiesa's there.
If I'm the UFC, okay, and I know we're talking Colby versus Harrington. You don't have to leave right away, buddy.
No. Come back on, bud.
Yeah. We could all have a conversation. If I'm the UFC, and I know they're talking about Colby fighting for the title, that's not the fight I make. If I'm the UFC, I'm putting Leon Edwards versus Kamaru Usman, because that is truly the fight that should happen. Leon Edwards is truly the number one contender. I don't give a fuck that he didn't beat Nate Diaz with fireworks. It doesn't matter. He's the guy who should be fighting for the title. And I would put Masvidal versus Colby Covington, because that fight right now makes more sense than ever before. Those guys hate each other. They're two dogs barking at each other. And those two guys, at the end of it, there's two superstars. The winner can go on to fight for a title, and it'll be completely justified. Completely justified. In the meantime, Gilbert Burns, you know, he can wait to see how the smoke clears. There's some fights coming up. Nick Diaz is coming back. Robbie Lawler's coming back. There's some interesting stuff that's happening in the division that could be fun for just matchups in the future. But if I'm the UFC, those are the fights that I'm making.
Yeah, the only problem is that Masvidal is a massive star. Nate Diaz is a massive star. Gilbert Burns and Leon Edwards, while I actually think they're better fighters, they don't have that same star attraction that they do. And they deserve it. Of course they do. But, you know, Masvidal's so enigmatic, so charismatic. You know, he talks well on the microphone. He fights like a motherfucker. He's got a great backstory. So does Leon Edwards. But he just doesn't, you know, he doesn't have that same pop on the microphone. He doesn't. So it's going to be interesting. I don't know. Harrington, what do you think?
Well, I mean, they tried the star-making thing by putting Leon up against Nate Diaz, and it failed pretty miserably. I mean, you know, why not give him the next biggest star in Leon, in Jorge Masvidal?
Give him the next.
Leon Edwards, right? You want to build this guy up. I agree with what Lewis is saying, right? If everything was fair and just in this world, Leon Edwards on an 8-fight win streak, his last loss to Kamaru Usman, it makes all the sense in the world. But the promotion is settled on Colby Covington. And I don't think I'm changing Dana White's mind. I don't think anybody on this broadcast is. So
you'll change Dana White's. You hold a lot of weight with Dana. He said to me, he said,
he holds a lot of weight, period.
Yeah, you know, he does. And he's holding more and more by the day. He said, Lewis, fuck that guy. Don't like him. He said, but that guy, that weird, disheveled person that smells, I can smell him through the screen. He said he has the ability to change the fights. So who, given that power, that newfound knowledge that you have, Harrington, what are you doing in the welterweight division?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if I had the magic wand, I agree with Lewis. Kamaru versus Leon Edwards, that makes the most sense. I would probably do Gilbert Burns. Gilbert Burns versus Jorge Masvidal at that point. Why not? I mean, you have Gilbert, who just fought for a title. He's got a great story. People like him. He's, you know, he's a very likable guy. And he can sell some pay-per-views if Masvidal's attached on the other end. Make that the number one contender fight. Yeah. Why not?
I mean, to be honest, out of those fights, Gilbert or Leon, I can't really see a sound argument for Masvidal fighting either one of them. You know, he's saying he wants to come back in October, which is a great timeline for those guys. You know, Gilbert's not injured from the fight, I don't believe. You know, they didn't take much damage. Leon's definitely not injured, you know. So an October fight is perfect. And who else other than Masvidal for either one of them? I mean, that's credible.
Okay, so what about Colby versus Masvidal? Leon Colby versus
Kamaru? No, it's Colby versus Kamaru. That's what's happening. Dana said that time and time again. It's not announced, but Colby versus Kamaru is the next fight. That's what's making this complicated.
Yeah, right. And also, look, yeah, Dana said it time and time again. But also, to be fair, Dana White says a lot of things sometimes, and then something happens. You know, something crazy comes about. You know, Nick Diaz knocks out Robbie Lawler in the first round. Then all of a sudden, Nick Diaz is right there fighting for the 170-pound title. But I've seen crazier things happen. I watched Chael Sonnen fight for the 205-pound title, coming off a two fight losing streak at 185 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. That's why Dana always says, we'll see how this plays out. Mm-hmm. Because everything changes. You know, people get injured in fights. Like you might say, after this fight, Conor versus Dustin, whoever wins, you know, fights for the belt, which is going to happen now by the looks of it, but you never know. Dustin could have broken a rib. Dustin could have, it could have been him that won the fight, but had a serious injury and would have been out for a while. Or guys get injured in training. You know, that's why he always says, we'll see how this plays out, because you can't, nothing is certain. Nothing's guaranteed in the fight game. I'm looking at the welterweight rankings. It's Kamaru, Colby, Gilbert, Leon, Masvidal, Chiesa, Stephen Thompson. Right, they're the top seven. So, I mean, it's Masvidal versus Leonor Gilbert Burns. Simple as that. Or maybe the winner of Chiesa and Vicente Luque. You never know. Anyway, well done, Gilbert Burns, friend of the show. Try and get him on next week. Get his thoughts on the situation. And commiserations to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Still a great fighter. Still one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. And still one of my favorite human beings.
Hey, Mike, let's take a quick moment and thank Blue Chew for supporting today's show. Blue Chew really does help enhance your performance in the bedroom if you're trying to go a few extra rounds. If you're trying to just have a longer lasting, let's just get scientific here, erection, Blue Chew is the way to go. And it works faster than the pills because it's chewable. It's the same active ingredient as Viagra and Cialis, so you know it works. And it's done very easy. Bisbee, tell them about how easy it is to get prescribed to Blue Chew.
Well, all you do, you go to bluechew.com, and within seconds, you are speaking to one of their affiliated physicians. You speak to them, you tell them what you need, and before you know it, bing, bang, bong, the delivery shows up at your door, indiscreet packaging. You don't have to go to the pharmacy. You don't have to go to the doctor. You don't basically have to give up half of your day. You just give up a few minutes at the website, bluechew.com, and you use the code that we give you, which is BELIEVE, and then obviously you don't have to pay anything. You get it for your first month for free, which is incredible. And then, you know, as you said, it has the same ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. You don't have to make a fool out of yourself in the bedroom or in front of a doctor. You don't have to waste any time, and it's cheaper. And the chewables that you get from bluechew.com can be taken on a full or an empty stomach. So any time of the day, whatever you want to do it, whenever you want to go crazy, whenever you want to fill your boots or fill her boots, whichever way around it is, you can get cracking anytime. One more time, all you got to do is go to bluechew.com, use the promo code BELIEVE. You will receive your first month for free, and we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast. Okay, what was before that? Oh, Taito Avassa. Taito Avassa, man.
I'm an idiot. Here's the thing. I thought Taito Avassa was going to win that fight. I picked Taito Avassa leaning up to the fight, but in the last minute, to make it interesting for the UFC cameras, I was like, all right, fine, I'll bet against Taito Avassa. And I put my money on, or I put my money. The bet we made was the loser had to do a shoey. So I picked Hardy, and who was it? It was Paco that picked Taito Avassa, and yeah, I had to drink a beer out of a goddamn boot.
I saw that. I saw that on your picture, and I thought, oh my God, Lewis, please, shame on you, jumping on the bandwagon. There's nothing original at this point about it. Everyone's doing them. I'm like, Lewis, please, have a bit of dignity. Have a little self-respect, please.
I hated it. I can taste it right now. It was an old boot too. First they were going to grab a new boot, and I was like, no, I'm not using a new boot.
Did somebody spit in it?
Yeah, we read it online that you're supposed to spit in
everyone
the boot yourself.
Everyone in the room is supposed to spit in it, from what I believe. I've never done one. I will never do one.
No, I spit in my own boot, but apparently people were giving me shit. They were like, dude, that's not how you fucking do a shoey.
Yeah, anyway, two of us, I mean, Is he going to go on and become the heavyweight champion of the world? You never know. Crazy things have happened, but probably not, right? Simply because there's guys like Ngannou, there's guys that are really, really good wrestlers, you know. But is he one of the funnest guys on the roster? Not only in the heavyweight division, on the roster, 100%. The man's awesome. I love everything about him. He walks out. I mean, listen, he's a heavy-hitting, serious fucking heavyweight from the mean streets of Western Sydney. You know what I mean? He's a tough guy. He's as tough as they come with a tough crew. And he's walking out to the Spice Girls, "If you want to be my lover." And I'm telling you, when that came on, just like we were singing it that time on the episode, everyone in the arena were all singing it, because everyone knows the words to that song. It's so famous, you know what I mean? And it's so like against trying to be sounding tough or walking out and being, you know, inspirational. And it's not like a serious tone. And then, you know, like McGregor comes out to the Foggy Dew, you know, and then it kicks into the Notorious. That's fucking cool as fuck, right? Not even cool. It's just fucking funny. It's lighthearted.
It's ironic.
Gets a smile on everyone's face. It's ironic. It's supposed to be ironic, and it's just great. You know what I mean?
I appreciate it. I can appreciate it. But I will say that I like when a fighter comes out to like a badass song that gets everyone going. But yeah, it's kind of funny. It happens once in a while. Who else does that? There's a few fighters that do silly songs, right?
Yeah, there's a few. But when you were saying about fighters coming out to the badass songs, I remember Anderson Silva, DMX, when that. And Chuck Liddell as well. I think he came out to DMX as well. And there's like those few bars at the start. Dun, 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 dun. I can't fucking do it. I can't sing. But you know what I mean? You hear that music. Like,
you actually sound like DMX right now.
Yo, where my dog's at? I do sound like DMX. But still, and you can see it, and the smoke clears and the crowd goes dark. And then the first few beats of the music come on. You're like, oh yeah, this is going to be great. I got to say, I do prefer that than fucking Spice Girls and fucking Scary Spice singing "If You Want to Be My Lover." But listen, he's awesome. And he knocked out Greg Hardy. You know why he knocked out Greg Hardy?
Why?
Because... And it was Stephen Kellerman. No, sorry, Stephen Kellerman. That's a combo. Right. Stephen A. Smith and what?
I thought you could say, good.
Max Kellerman?
Yeah. No, you said Brian. I'm like, oh, have I frozen up again? No, sorry. Max Kellerman. Max Kellerman was like, and he had a great point. He said, you know why that happened? And this isn't why it happened. He said, it's because Hardy's an athlete. And two of us as a fighter. And I was like, interesting take. He said, yeah. But what happened was, the reason he got knocked out is because Greg Hardy's a big guy. He hits hard as fuck. One of the hardest hitting guys. He's absolutely gigantic. And he cracked two of us and had two of us hurt, right? But what you got to do in that situation, you still got to be composed. Greg Hardy had an overload of adrenaline. He's like, here we go. UFC 264, packed house, T-Mobile Arena. I've rocked him. Oh my God, let's go again. At that point, I guess a guy like Tuivasa, I guess a big hard-hitting heavyweight, you can't run in and get reckless. And that's what he did. He got a little bit excited on the emotions, showed a little bit of inexperience. He ran in to try and get the finish, but was a little sloppy and a little reckless and left himself open to the counter. And when someone's hurt, sometimes that's when they're most dangerous. Remember Pat Barry and Chet Congo? What happened in that knockout?
What a crazy fight that was.
It was fucking crazy, but you got to be careful. You still got to be composed. You can't just throw caution to the wind. I mean, sometimes you can and it might happen, or sometimes Tai Tuivasa might connect with a left hook. I mean, that's what happened there, and I couldn't be happier for Tai Tuivasa. I mean, he's just such a great guy. I said he's going to come on the show next week, so.
Good. Don't tell him that I bet crossed. Against him, please.
I'm going to tell him.
Please, no.
Why not?
Because you regularly start beefs between me and UFC heavyweights, and I'm gonna run into these guys one day, and I'm gonna explain myself.
Who were the other ones?
It was what's his name? Tom Aspinall.
Oh, he doesn't like you.
I know. You fucking prick.
He messages me, oh shit, I owe Tom Aspinall, if you're looking at this, I owe you a phone call, my brother. My apologies. No, but he messages me, he says, ah, Lucy's all right. I'm only messing with him. He doesn't,
I know.
He doesn't hate you. He's having a laugh.
No, I know. But I like the narrative that me and Tom Aspinall have a beef.
Yeah. Well, now you and Tai Tuivasa, he is not going to like you. Don't go to Sydney. But yeah, well done, Tai Tuivasa. Hopefully comes on next week. Before that, we had Irene Aldana taking on Kunitskaya. Kunitskaya came to the UFC as a kickboxer, turned into a grappler last few fights, and then went back to the kickboxing this time. Came out, looked good, throwing axe kicks all over the place. Irene Aldana came in 4 pounds overweight. Shame on you for that. But she was very apologetic. I thought she handled it well. She wasn't a dick about it. And she got a beautiful stoppage, beautiful knockout. She's got great fucking hands. She's great. She's a force to reckon with. I think she, what weight is she? 135? Tough with Amanda Nunes as the champ. But she's definitely championship material.
Hey guys, let's take a moment and thank rockauto.com for supporting today's show. It's an online store that has every auto part for the best prices possible. You might be a car guy. You might be somebody who fixes your own car. You might work at an auto shop yourself. If you're getting auto parts in any capacity, you want to make sure you get them in a convenient way. They've been in business for over 20 years. Why wouldn't you want to pay the best prices possible for auto parts?
Yeah, listen, at the end of the day, if you know cars, then you'll have a bit of info. But if you're not like the best car guy, there's a lot of shenanigans. There's a lot of shady business. I'm not saying all car dealers or people in the auto industry are liars and they mark things up. But let me tell you, that does happen a lot. It does. Simple as that. Because you don't know. You go in, you take your car and you're like, I need this fixing. And you're like, ooh, it's going to be bad. I've lifted up the bonnet or the hood and this is fucked. That's fucked. And you can't say otherwise if you don't know.
I have no idea.
Yeah, no idea. They're lying. They're taking your money. Fortunately, no more talking to the counter guys who need to order your parts if you aren't really sure what you're looking for. Never have quite what you need. And then after all the hassle, they still charge you the storefront markups. Basically, they charge you too much. At rockauto.com, you can easily find everything you need. And whether you're a mechanic, an auto shop, or working on your own car, everyone has access to the same incredible pricing at rockauto.com. So once more, rockauto.com. No promo card needed, as their pricing is already that good. Listen, if you've got a car, you know what you're doing, you know your way around an engine, and you are working on your own bits, stop going down to wherever it is you go. Rockauto.com will get the parts to you the cheapest way possible, nice and fast. You're not going to get ripped off, and you're going to support our show. Once more, rockauto.com. Okay, let's get back into it. Let's talk about this then. This is fun. Sean O'Malley, Chris Moutinho. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the story of that fight is that Chris Moutinho is a little badass, right? I think that's what, and don't get me wrong, Sean O'Malley, it was a clinic, right? Sean O'Malley looked incredible, but Chris Moutinho was just a little human punching bag, and he just kept coming, you know, comparing him to the Korean zombie, you know, calling him a zombie. I'm like, he just wouldn't go down, didn't go down. Fight was ended, which I honestly, and I, you're going to probably disagree because you're a fighter, and obviously it was Herb Dean, I believe, right? Herb Dean has the fighter's interest in mind, and Herb Dean is a professional, one of the best in the business. But I just felt like they could have let him either get knocked out or have that decision. Like, make it a decision. Make him go to the decision with O'Malley. And especially if O'Malley goes on to be the special fighter that he seems to be, then he sort of has that. It's like, nah, you know what, dude? That guy couldn't fucking stop me. And he learns from that and comes back even stronger the next time. But the story overall, Chris Moutinho is a little badass. O'Malley, incredible. But O'Malley did what he was supposed to do. Honestly, O'Malley was supposed to knock the guy out and supposed to really finish him. It was supposed to be able to walk through him. But overall, very, very fun way to open up a pay-per-view.
No, it was awesome. And well done to both guys. Well done to both guys. I thought we'll talk about O'Malley quickly for a second because I do want to talk about Moutinho and how impressed with him I was. But O'Malley, you know, listen, that was a really, really good fight for him because he got almost three full rounds in there against an opponent that won't go away, that keeps walking you down. And I thought O'Malley looked sensational. His striking was beautiful. He was moving backwards while fighting a lot. He was throwing a lot of feints, misdirection. There was real snap on the punches, beautiful combinations, amazing, elusive footwork. He'd go one way, then the other. He'd get off the fence every time. It was great. And to have that experience, because he's still kind of a young fighter, that will serve him well throughout his career as he goes on and he starts to fight better competition. You know, one interesting point, because Moutinho was walking him down the whole time, O'Malley was walking backwards. And because he was walking backwards, that takes a little bit of the sting off your punch. Obviously, you're going in the opposite direction of where you're throwing a punch. If you're going forward towards where you're going to punch, you got your body weight going into it as well. So therefore, you see a little more sting and a little more power. If he was going forward, maybe he would have got the knockout. So yeah, but listen, well done O'Malley, great fight, very entertaining. I loved it. I loved every second of it. Everyone in the arena did. Moutinho, I mean, come on. I mean, listen, who knows what he's going to do next, right? you know? And I guess that will be telling for Sean O'Malley. If he goes on a run and goes on a tear and starts beating people, great, you know, and maybe a star is born. Who knows? Maybe he's a flash in the pan. Only time will tell. But if you're Chris Moutinho, you're fighting on the regional scene. I don't know what he was getting paid, but it's not a lot when you start. Mm-hmm. 1,500, $2,000 tops, $3,000 maybe for his fight. You know, fights before UFC, gotta be. I can't imagine it's more than that. I don't know. It's a long time since I was in that position. I don't really know what they got paid, get paid, but it's not a lot. But he comes to the UFC on a Conor McGregor fight card, opens up the pay-per-view. Right, he's probably used to fighting in some local working men's club or sports hall with 150 people, drunk hillbillies there, and he, you know what I mean. In a little, probably not even a cage, maybe a ring. Do you know what I mean? Just like these low level shows. Next minute, he's in the UFC. He's in Las Vegas. He's fighting on a McGregor fight card. Fucking, he's got Reebok stuff, and people talk about the UFC jitters. But imagine that situation. I mean, it's one thing going to the Apex, which I'm doing this Friday, and that's going to see him like a real come down from what I was just at. But it's one thing to debut at the Apex. To debut at that spectacle, 22,000 people sold out. You look up, and all you can see is fucking people as far as the eye can see, and the sound music is deafening. You're stepping in the octagon.
Everyone's bracelets are fucking blinking.
Into your green hair. Bruce Buffer's blinding you with his fucking tuxedo. Do you know what I mean? It's like, whoa, that's a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
And motherfucker, he lived up to it. Every single part of it, he walked him down. He was great. And he made it interesting because as the fight progressed, he started to land shots. You know what I mean? And he was like, oh my God, could you imagine if he caught O'Malley? O'Malley was never hurt. But Moutinho showed a lot of heart, a lot of courage. Now the stoppage. Yeah, I've got mixed feelings on it. You know, I think after what Moutinho went through, but listen, I always say this, fighter safety is paramount. The referee's job there, first and foremost, is to protect the fighters. But there was a case to stop that fight in the first round. There was a case to stop that fight in the second round, maybe in the third round. Hmm. If you're going to stop it and save him from some damage, stop it 10 minutes earlier. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, Herb Dean's one of the best in the business, and I never disagree. But just for Moutinho to go through that and to take all that damage and to be 20 seconds away from the gigantic moral victory of going to a decision as opposed to a stoppage. It's like, come on, man. I think there was officially 23 seconds left on the clock. You could have let that go. You could have let it, 20 seconds, man. 20 seconds. I mean, he probably got hit 150 times. He might have got hit another three. You know, he could have let that go. He could have let that little green-haired goblin have the moral victory.
Yeah. Honestly, because Herb's the best in the business, I almost feel like he could let it go. Like, it's not like, it wasn't like, he wasn't really out on his feet. He was just taking shots.
And we take shots. That's what we do. That's why we get paid. That's why that little shit in Louisiana didn't hurt me, because we take shots. We get punched all the time. I get it. Fighter safety. And maybe Moutinho, I don't think he complained. You know, and I'm not knocking Herb Dean. I'm just saying for the storyline, you know, and I'm not knocking Herb. You know, I had no problem with it at the time. I get it. I understand it. I'm just saying, for what Moutinho did, stepping up on 6 days' notice, doing all that, and then showing up the way he did, walk him down, not get tired, take all that damage and still make the fight interesting, it would have been nice for him. But of course, I'm not there. I'm not 2 feet away. I can't see the look on the fighter's face when the eyes roll back in the head. That's very different. You know, Herb Dean's got a very unique perspective. Mm. You know, some fights, was it Pride or some places they have the referee cam? Don't they remember that?
Yeah.
I'd like to see that sometimes, because that'd be really interesting to see the referee's perspective.
Yeah. Recently I watched the referee cam. Was it PFL? We watched it. Remember, it was just fucking terrible. It was just the worst. Like,
no, often the shit. Often the shit. But in Pride, I think it was Pride back in the day. They had some good ones. But yeah. Well done. Well done, Moutinho. Brian, I sent you a video of when McGregor did his walkout. Let's take a look at this. It's pretty fucking epic, to be honest. It looks absolutely incredible. We got sound. I mean, 22,000 people. The atmosphere was electric. I mean, this video goes on for a while, but...
Oh, no. People couldn't fly in from Ireland, right?
No, not really. Hold on, there's Cruz.
Let's go, dog.
There's Stephen A in the background with a white jacket. I mean, look at that. It's fucking, I mean, yeah, it's nice to be ringside or even on the first riser. But in this situation, being so high up and seeing the view from here, Anyway, it gives you an idea. It was fucking cool. I mean, look at that. I mean, what a great view. What a great view. You know what I mean? Yeah, even just being there myself, you never think. I mean, that's as high as it gets in combat sports. I mean, that is just, it's phenomenal. It's crazy.
Yeah. The event seemed pretty special overall. It had one of those, UFC 100 type feels like. There wasn't like an official like fight week this year, right? In Vegas, like usually it's July 4th weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Obviously, it was the pandemic and whatnot. But yeah. No. Listen. Just unreal. I don't know what's going to happen with McGregor. I really don't. I know he's saying he's going to come back. Maybe he does. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he takes his money and goes and does something else. UFC are obviously going to want to promote him. He's a cash cow for the organization. He's like, what, 7 of the 10 biggest time pay-per-views for the company. So it makes sense. If it was my company, I'd put McGregor back in there again against Dustin straight away. 100%. Why wouldn't you? So it's going to be fun to see how it all plays out. Yes, Harrington.
So one thing McGregor did say in the post-fight talk, he was like, you need guys like me, guys who are, you know, calling for the next fight and immediately setting up these lines here. You know, do you agree with that sentiment from a couple of people online that it was a good thing for him to be doing all that shit talking while he was hurt on the ground, you know, setting up the next fight before he'd even left the cage for this one?
No, he was quoting Scarface, wasn't he? He was quoting Scarface. You need guys like me. I'm the bad guy. You need people like me. It's good for him. I don't know. I mean, listen, that made it interesting. That gave us a talking point today. That makes like, oh my God, do we want to see the fight again? It makes it a real discussion, a real conversation. I don't think the UFC need him. Of course they don't need him. In fact, Stephen A. Smith asked Conor that last week. I don't know if you saw that interview, but Stephen A. spoke to him and asked him some really good challenging questions. And Conor was fucking angry. He was fired up. He was all week. But he was asked, does the UFC need you? I can't remember what he said. He didn't say yes. He didn't say no. He was kind of like, oh, you know, UFC are doing great things, you know. And the reality is they don't. You know, if you look back in the day, obviously it started with Hoist Gracie, but then you had Tito Ortiz, you had Chuck Liddell, you had Randy Couture, you had Ronda Rousey, you had now Conor McGregor, Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
There's always going to be stars. And the UFC marketing machine that they have, okay, granted, you can't just manufacture another McGregor. You know, he was maybe once in a generation athlete or fighter for the UFC. But still, there's always, just when you think it's done, and they got no more stars. Or George St. Pierre, we never mentioned him. There's always these big stars that break out, you know, and there'll always be another because there's always fighters coming through. There's young fighters listening to this right now. I hope that maybe one of them is going to go on one day and become the next big thing. I'm sure after listening to an MMA podcast, there's a lot of people that train, a lot of people that want to get in the UFC. And there's somebody listening to this right now that one day will be a UFC champion if you conceive, you believe, and you motherfucking achieve.
It's very funny because you said you weren't sure if he said the UFC does need him or if they don't. Here's a quote from Conor, just to make it very clear. They said, does the UFC need you? He said, UFC needs me forever. I am forever. My accomplishments are forever. My knockouts are forever. My run is forever. My domination of two divisions is forever. And what's to come is going to be more forever.
Yeah, no. But what he's saying is there. Well, he said the UFC needs me forever. He says, I am forever. That's true. His legacy set in stone. His two-weight division championship run, that's set in stone. You know, people are saying now, you know, oh, God, he's tarnishing his legacy. I mean, to a certain degree-ish, but what he achieved will always be there. That will never go away. You cannot take away what he achieved, but what he does now will affect it. Look at Anderson Silva. You know, I think Anderson Silva, when you say his name, it still evokes those memories of when he was the man. When you say Anderson Silva to me, I still think of the guy that fucking, you know, did these crazy wild knockouts and entertained the masses and was unbelievably beatable. Yes, at the end of his run, you know, it was bad. It was poor. It was a bad showing. Last fight, got knocked out against Uriah Hall and went on quite the losing streak. But when he was on top, I still think about that. So, and I'm sure in years to come, people will still think about the electricity that McGregor brought to the octagon, as opposed to getting his leg snapped, getting knocked out, and getting choked out by Khabib. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah, that will be his legacy, without a doubt. But I think that he will fit into the narrative, which is most fighters. It's not unique. Most fighters don't go out on top. There's a couple. There's a couple ever, you know, and even Mayweather is playing with fire right now. Mayweather went out on top and he's still sort of fucking around. He's still doing things that who knows, you know, like maybe he could get caught, get knocked out by one of these guys one day. And that would technically tarnish his legacy to a certain degree, you know. And I just think that I don't think that not going out on top tarnishes a fighter's legacy just because that's sort of the norm. You know, you fight until your body gives out. You fight until you can't do it anymore. You fight until you have to move on ultimately. And that's the case for 99.9% of fighters, and then you have the Khabibs, which is just the reason we talk about Khabib that way is because it's such a special, unique thing.
Yeah, and you Floyd Mayweathers and you George St. Pierre to a certain degree. Yeah, he got a couple of losses, but he retired as a champ as well.
And he avenged all those losses.
Yeah, no, exactly, exactly. So, and you're right, it is a common thing in combat sports. People stick around, they get used to the allure, they get used to the money. And not just that, it's not the money or the allure or the attention or whatever. They still think they can do it. They believe that they can do it. Like Conor believes that he can come back and beat people. Just like Anderson believed he could still get the job done. Anderson Silva wasn't showing up for the money against Uriah Hall. He was showing up to fight Uriah, to beat Uriah, to show the world, hey, look, I'm still one of the best martial artists on the planet. Yeah, okay. The few million dollars he would have got, that's great as well. Don't get me wrong. That doesn't hurt. But that's not the only reason. Anderson Silva's bank balance, I'm assuming, is very, very fat. He doesn't need the money. But this is who he is. And that's who Conor McGregor is. And that's who all these other people throughout history were.
Yeah, and also it is sports. You've said this a million times, you know, where it's like, you know, somebody's got to lose. And you don't know that it's your time until it's your time. You're like, oh shit, I lost. I thought I was gonna win. I thought I was gonna go on to be champion for the next 10 fights, but I lost. And it's like, well, now I got to try to win it back. You know, whether it's a fluke or I think I can beat this guy again. Well, now you're two losses in a row, and you're like, all right. Well, at that point, you look in the mirror and you go, look, you know, I can't do this anymore. My body's failing me, or whatever it is. I don't think that shouldn't necessarily, I feel like it's sort of looked down upon. It's like, oh, he's going out in a skid. His legacy's being damaged. But like, no, that's just sort of the name of the game. You don't know it's your time until it's your time.
And I hate to bring Conor up again, but that is the big talking point this week. But that's you know, probably going to be the reason if he doesn't retire, which I think he should. I think he should retire now. He's got the money, he's got the fame, he's got his legacy, and now he's losing fights. But the one thing that will stop him, it's that pride and the ego, right? That as you just said, you don't want to go out on a loss. You don't want that to be the last memory. And every time you get beat, you're like, I can eradicate that in the next one. Just give me another fight. I'll win the next one. And then you lose. And you're like, give me one more. I still got this, coach. I can do this. I can do this. And then you lose again. And that's what keeps happening. And then that's ultimately what does maybe tarnish it. But anyway, what do we know? That's it. That's the show. We'll be back on Thursday with another one. I'll have a voice. Energy is going to be through the roof because I'm still suffering from a 2-day fucking hangover. And until then, thank you for tuning in. Apologies once more for the late show. And Luis J. Gomez, yes?
Just want to tell you, go to our iTunes right now, subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating, positive review, subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com. You can get the latest episodes, notifications every time we drop a new episode. The entire On Demand library at gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use that promo code BYM and get a 7-day free trial. Live shows coming up, lewisofskanks.com. Come check me out live. I'll be in Connecticut this weekend, going to be in San Diego and South Jersey the week after that. And beyond that, yo, go buy some merch. BYMmerch.com. Grab all the merch.
All right, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, that's the show. See you on Thursday.